Shakespeare refers to this resurrection, but as when the bird of wonder dies, the maiden phoenix, her ashes new create another heir as great in admiration as herself. Raymond Fowler, author of The Andreessen Affair, Prentice Hall, 1979, has described the memory block. The actual contact or abduction experience has somehow been erased, perhaps mercifully, from their conscious minds. Later, flashbacks, dreams and intuitive feelings cause witnesses to suspect that something unusual has happened to them. And nonetheless, details of the abductee's experience remain locked in the deepest recesses of their minds. The space aliens routinely impose such blocks. The space people, on the other hand, use an opposite technique in regard to memory. Having given George Adamski a message for man, the abductee wakes up, or drives on, oblivious to those memories. Until they surface during hypnosis. What was going on here? Kind, the master told him not to worry about remembering it. When he began to write, assured the master, a clear memory of the message would come to him. Theories: the abductees were undergoing a new kind of flying saucer experience. Involuntary and intrusive, it was a far cry from that of the contactees of the 50s. Adamski, Standing Horse, and the rest had been invited aboard, not kidnapped. Moreover, their hosts had been the space people, a high-minded, benevolent folk, who resembled us, respected us, and were eager to share their wisdom. By contrast, the space aliens had a forbidding air about them. They were brusque and uncommunicative, alien creatures, who seemed interested only in examining us. Who were these bug-eyed creatures? Where did they come from? Why were they doing this? A number of explanations have been offered for the abduction phenomenon. Ufologists, psychologists, parapsychologists, sociologists, skeptics, all have attempted to elucidate the matter. In the following pages I shall examine their theories. Then I shall present a theory of my own. The most obvious explanation, of course, is the literal one. What happened to the Hills, Betty Andreessen, and scores of others is exactly what they say happened. They were abducted by space aliens. Against their will they were taken aboard a UFO and medically examined. Such is the tale they tell, and many ufologists accept it. As to why the space aliens should be conducting medical exams, the ufologists disagree. Some consider their motivation to be unfathomable. These are aliens, after all, with an alien agenda. Others believe the examiners to be scientists, seeking to learn more about our biology, or extracting genetic material for use in experiments. But whatever their purpose, these are real, physical beings, visitors from another planet, who land their ship, pile out, and look around for someone to abduct. Serving to bolster the extraterrestrial theory was an article in Astronomy magazine, by an Ohio school teacher named Marjorie Fish. Fish was intrigued by the star map that Betty Hill had seen. Initially, this literal view, nuts and bolts spacecraft, flesh and blood aliens, prevailed among students of the abduction phenomenon. But in recent years a new school of thought has risen to prominence in ufology. Known as the New Wave, it accepts that abduction experiences are real, but believes them to be psychic in nature. That is, they are paranormal events, akin to apparitions, visions, shamanic journeys, fairy encounters, etc. Such experiences take place in another dimension, a non-material plane, a realm beyond time and space. Betty Andreessen said of her abducting her encounter and reproduced during hypnosis. Comparing Hill's drawing with astronomical charts, Fish found it corresponded with a particular section of the sky. Skeptics groaned that it was bound to correspond with some section of the sky, thus, the original map, and the experience associated with it, must have been real. Fish was able to pinpoint the home star of the aliens as Zeta 2 Reticuli. That would make them neighbors of the party horn-nosed aliens, who are thought to originate in Zaniculus. Doctors, the future and the past are the same as today to them. Time to them is not like our time, of a different nature than our everyday world. This place is nonetheless real. It is reached via altered, or non-ordinary, states of consciousness, and is inhabited by entities like the space aliens. New wave ufologists note that the aliens, with their grotesque appearance and obnoxious behavior, are reminiscent of demons. Could it be, they wonder, that those rude spirits of old have returned, in a modern guise? That they are again flying about and tormenting us, but with spacecraft now instead of wings, and medical instruments instead of hot pincers? New wave ufologists have also noted parallels between abductions and out-of-body experiences. One example they give is the journey taken by shamans to another worldly realm. Another is the near-death experience. Yet another is astral projection. Could it be that whatever is going on involves our astral rather than physical body? A problem in understanding all this may be our Cartesian notion of the strict division between mind and matter. As Dr. John Mack, the Harvard psychiatrist who is studying UFO abductees, has written, "We may be left with the choice of searching, vainly, I think, for ways of explaining the phenomena within our existing worldview, or, instead, of collapsing our rigid separation of psyche and reality, of inner and outer, and opening ourselves to expanded ontological possibilities." Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens, Charles Scribner's Sons, 1994, an Atlanta policeman, quoted in the winter 1995 issue of UFO Universe, gave this description of an out-of-body style abduction. "I was sitting comfortably in my favorite easy chair, facing the open window and the night sky. An erratically moving light caught my attention. Then a very strange thing happened. At first I thought I was fainting. My entire being seemed to be rolling up from my feet as if my body were a toothpaste tube and my consciousness was the paste being squeezed from it. Finally my consciousness seemed to burst free, and to soar through space. The next thing I knew, I was standing inside some kind of craft. I was aware of a lot of smallish people with big heads standing around me. I was being touched, stroked, poked, and prodded. Then I was aware of my wife shaking my shoulder and telling me that I should come to bed instead of sitting there dozing. But for skeptics, neither the literal nor the paranormal view will do. Alien abductions? Preposterous, they cry. The skeptics may concede an experience, but will insist it was psychological, that is, imaginary, in nature. They draw our attention to the fact that most abductions are recalled only during hypnosis, the subject having no prior recollection of the alleged event. And they remind us that hypnotism is not the truth serum of popular supposition. One of the most outspoken of the skeptics is Dr. Robert Baker, psychologist and hypnosis expert. "Stories elicited via hypnosis are highly suspect," insists Baker, "since the subjects are capable of involuntary fabrication. Any legitimate psychologist with experience in the area," he says, "would be the first to tell you that the abduction phenomenon is utter nonsense. The problem, in the view of psychologists like Baker, is one of suggestibility." They cite an experiment in which a group of non-abductees, persons with no claims involving UFOs, were hypnotized and told to imagine an abduction. "You're aboard a flying saucer," they were told. "What do you see? What's happening to you?" Their stories were compared with those elicited from actual abductees, and found to be similar in detail. It was concluded that suggestibility was the operative factor in both sets of tales. Another explanation offered by skeptics is the siesta theory. It allows that the memories uncovered by hypnosis are genuine. They are memories of dreams, however, not of actual events. The subject dreamt of being abducted, then forgot his dream. Upon being recalled during hypnosis, it is mistaken for reality. And the missing time he is unable to account for? Simple, the hour during which he nodded off and dreamt. Or what about the birth trauma? Some psychologists believe that primal event, which hypnosis allows one to relive, to be the source of abduction memories. Others, of course, the supposed non-abductees might have had suppressed abduction experiences of their own, from which their imagined accounts were drawn. If it is true that millions of Americans have been abducted and given memory blocks, see page 115, this could constitute a flaw in the design of the experiment. Believer syndrome called sleep paralysis is involved. In sleep paralysis, a person is awake but unable to move, and becomes convinced a threatening being is in a room with him. He may even see this being, which has been variously described as a hag, amorous ape, dark form, mist, or gremlin. Or how about waking dreams? Since the Middle Ages, says Dr. Baker, people have been abducted by dragons, ogres, leprechauns, fairies and so on. They're not crazy, they're victims of what are commonly known as waking dreams, delusions you have when you're in a hypnopompic, waking up, or hypnagogic, falling asleep, state. Or even an allergic reaction? In his book Allergies and Aliens, Discovery Times Press, 1994, Albert Budden theorizes that sensitivity to electromagnetic emissions triggers a neurological attack of paralysis, visions of aliens, and missing time. Whatever the case, psychologists find the abduction phenomenon interesting, even significant. But they refuse to grant it any reality beyond the ordinary workings of the mind. They seek instead to direct a spotlight on the underlying psychology. And the most illuminating spotlight to have been directed? In the view of many, it is that provided by Philip Klass, the debunker whom we met earlier. Klass, in UFO Abduction, A Dangerous Game, Prometheus Books, 1988, has explained abductions in terms of media influence and a suggestible populace. He claims that most reports derive from the tale told by the Hills, and that specific media events, in particular, a widely seen television movie, quoted in Carried Away? By Frank Husnick, USA Weekend, June 25-27, 1993. Supporting the waking dream theory are the frequent reports of abduction from automobile. For it is known that driving along empty stretches of highway, alone at night, is conducive to waking dreams. It is also conducive, Dr. Baker has pointed out, to episodes of missing time. What driver has not experienced such periods of blankness, realizing with a start that he has been traveling in a trance, utterly unaware of the road or anything else? We're responsible for that tale being impressed upon public consciousness. The public first heard about UFO abductions in 1965, says Klass, in a series of newspaper articles about the Hills. The articles attracted much attention. As Betty Hill would recall, public reaction was instantaneous. Everyone wanted to know about our experience. We received telephone calls from Europe, Canada, and all over the United States. We were contacted by TV and radio stations, newspaper reporters visited, and letters, from everywhere. The space aliens were out of the bottle. The following year, Look magazine set circulation records with excerpts from a forthcoming book about the Hills. When the book, John Fuller's The Interrupted Journey, came out, it was a bestseller. The aliens were loose in the land. It was during this period that Betty Andreessen and others had their abduction experiences. But the phenomenon was still relatively rare. Then, in the fall of 1975, a movie based on Fuller's book was broadcast on television. Millions of persons who saw the NBC TV show, says Klass, learned that UFOnauts are shorter than Earthlings and have large bald heads and large slanting eyes. This stereotype would emerge in many claims of UFO abduction that were made shortly after the TV program was aired. One such claim was that of Travis Walton, who would admit to having seen the movie 2 weeks before his own abduction. The boom was on. Klass submits that the Hills tale percolated into the public's imagination, and that all subsequent abductions, whether hoaxes, dreams, or hypnotically induced fantasies, can be traced back to it. The movie in particular provided millions of viewers with a script for UFO abductions and with visual images that would find a niche in their memories for their own UFO abduction nightmares and fantasies. Thus, the similarity of detail in abduction reports is not, as believers contend, a mark of their genuineness, the result of their reference to a common reality. Rather, that similarity is the result of their common descent from the dreams and hypnosis fantasies and much publicized tale of the Hills. Believers will grant that the publicity accorded the Hills did spark a wave of abduction reports, but only because that publicity caused abductees to take courage and face their own blocked memories. Poppycock, says Klass, rolling his eyes. It's all a media-fostered delusion. So there are numerous theories as to the true nature of the abduction phenomenon. Yet none of them, in my view, have adequately explained it. The real story? Read on. And where did the hills get their imagery? Barney described the space aliens as resembling the inhabitants of the Magellan Straits, whose photo he and Betty had seen at an anthropology lecture. Could that photo, of primitive people with bulging eyes, have provided the raw material for their fantasies? It has also been noted that Killers from Space, a 1953 movie with bug-eyed aliens, an operating room, and memory blocks, bears striking similarities to the story told by the Hills. Convincing as it may be, Klass's theory is not incompatible with a paranormal explanation for space aliens. Might not some psychic entity engendered or set loose by the mind, derive its form, but that only, from the imagery at large in a culture? My theory, my old impulse would have been to agree with Klass. Convinced that UFOs were luminous cells and that man was alone in the universe, I would have nodded smugly at his analysis. Alien abductions? Really now? Media influence, suggestibility, and credulity had given rise to an absurdity. But that was before the evidence, those amazing photos, the testimony of contactees, a potato from space, had convinced me that flying saucers were real. And if the contactees were believable, why not the abductees? Take them at their word, I told myself, what they were describing was factual. These people had been abducted by space aliens, and subjected to medical exams. Yet the question remained, why was this happening? Why were the aliens conducting medical exams? Why would they travel thousands of light years, and kidnap people, for so prosaic a purpose? What was going on here? The matter was perplexing. But as I pondered it, I saw that, 1. Abductions were an American phenomenon. Cases reported outside the US were rare, and tended to follow other patterns. 2. The phenomenon did not begin until the early 60s. 3. Central to it were those medical exams. Performed quickly and mechanically, they had a perfunctory quality to them, as if the aliens wished to perform as many exams as possible. What significance might be gleaned from these facts? Could they be linked? I racked my brains. What event or set of circumstances involved solely the U.S. began during the 60s and related to medicine? Then it came to me. Medicare, Medicaid. America's healthcare program for the needy. I was vaguely familiar with the history and provisions of this government program. Investigating further, I learned that it had begun to take shape in 1961. That was the year Congress and the new administration had begun moving towards a health plan. Support had been gathered, studies had been made, bills had been drafted. 1961. The same year the abduction phenomenon had first manifest itself, with the kidnapping of the Hills. The legislative process took several years. But finally, on July 30, 1965, President Johnson had signed into law Titles 18 and 19 of the Social Security Act. To emphasize the historic nature of the occasion, he had signed the bill with 100 pence, inscribing a small portion of his signature with each pen. The pens had then been passed out as souvenirs, to those instrumental in the bill's passage. Medicare, Medicaid, the program Johnson would come to see as the crowning achievement of his presidency, has become a reality. It was now possible for a physician to perform a medical procedure, or simply to examine a patient, and receive payment from the government. A billion-dollar program that provided health insurance for the poor, the elderly, and the chronically ill, Medicare, Medicaid was a boon for many Americans. But it was also a golden opportunity for unscrupulous persons to enrich themselves via a scam. Unscrupulous persons or beings. Which is what I suddenly perceived UFO abductions to be. An insurance scam. Perpetrated by beings from another planet. In a flash, it all became clear to me. The aliens were performing unnecessary medical exams. On randomly selected persons. In an assembly line fashion. They then submitted the necessary paperwork to the government, and received payment. And if it was true that more than 3 million Americans had been abducted, this was a multi-million dollar operation. As for the details of the scam, how the aliens delivered the paperwork into the system, where they received their payments, what they did with the dollars, I had no idea. Presumably, somewhere on Earth they maintained a base, where the clerical work was performed. Perhaps this base was located at Mount Shasta, the site of so many UFO sightings. I could imagine a vast cavern beneath the mountain. In it, forms were filled out by aliens hunched over typewriters. Or by human slaves. Or by captured beings from around the universe. Whatever. But something of the sort had to be going on. The question will be asked, how could the space aliens have known, light years away on their home planet, that we were ripe for such a scam? The answer must be they are able to detect government programs from a distance. It is comparable to the ability of the space people to detect nuclear explosions. And just as the space people had hastened Earthward, to save us from destruction, the aliens, too, had hurried over. To make a bundle. The more I pondered this theory, the more convincing it became. 1966 had indeed been a watershed year for abductions, as Philip Klass maintained. But not on account of a best-selling book in suggestible public. Rather, it was the year the new health plan began to be implemented. And the dramatic increase in abduction reports during the 70s, the result of a television movie? Not at all. That was when the various states had gotten their plans in place, and Medicare, Medicaid had become fully operational. Whereupon, the aliens had gone to town. Gwasga told Betty Ann Reason in 1966, "We love the human race. We have come to help the human race." Had they really? I don't think so. They had come to conduct an insurance scam and rake in dollars. Why would they come so far for so venal a purpose? My guess is that the space aliens occupy a peculiar niche in the ecology of the universe. They are a species that has evolved in a parasitic fashion, sustaining itself through interplanetary fraud. I am reminded of the space critters, drifting about the galaxy in search of power lines from which to feed. The space aliens, too, travel about, looking for societies with a susceptible health plan. Among the millions of inhabited planets, there must be many of these. The aliens are able to locate and exploit them. Anyhow, that's my theory. If it's correct, President Johnson's health program has been suffering, since its inception, from unimagined abuse. And poor Johnson, who waged an unpopular war, and left a legacy of debt and social dependency, must be blamed, too, for attracting the space aliens. Our healthcare system is currently being reformed. The new setup will probably make this sort of abuse impossible, and the aliens will move on to some other planet. Until then, we must endure shenanigans. Spiritual benefits, whatever they are, demons, scientists from afar, interplanetary crooks. The space aliens would seem to be prime candidates for avoidance. Forced medical exams are nobody's idea of fun, except maybe theirs, and for the average abductee, the only good thing about the entire business is that he is made to forget it. Yet it has become increasingly evident that, disturbing as they are, UFO abductions can have a positive side. Incredible as it may sound, an abductee can profit from his experience. For there are spiritual and psychological benefits to be gained. In recent years, a number of mental health professionals have been studying the phenomenon, and counseling its victims. One of these is Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who hosts the annual Rocky Mountain Conference of UFO Abductees. Sprinkle feels that important lessons may be learned from an encounter with aliens. One can acquire a sense of being part of a larger reality, and become what he calls a cosmic citizen. Sprinkle encourages abductees to view their experience as a transformative journey, a source of personal growth. Similar sentiments have been expressed by Dr. David Gottlieb, a Canadian psychiatrist, writing in the Bulletin of Anomalous Experience, "Maybe it's a personal growth challenge." One of the things I've seen happen in the therapeutic process is that when you begin to suggest that to them, they begin to develop an insight not only about their abduction experience, but about other aspects of their life as well. All experience, positive or negative, is an opportunity for transformation. This, because it grabs you and shakes you so much, is profoundly transformative, if you let it be so. The benefits may go even further. Dr. John Mack is the Harvard psychiatrist who specializes in the treatment of abductees. In Abductions, Human Encounters with Aliens, Mack describes the experience as a cosmic correction, whose purpose is to push us up the evolutionary ladder, to help develop our consciousness. Abductees, he reports, may undergo profound spiritual development, including intense sensitivity to the destruction of the Earth. And they often become aware of other realities, dimensions beyond our own universe, or even develop psychic abilities. They also gain a sense of oneness with all things, and cease to identify with a narrow social role. Given all this, Mack urges abductees to see themselves, not as victims, but as pioneers in a new human endeavor. And Dr. Kenneth Ring, a psychologist interested in the similarities between UFO and near-death experiences, sees abductees, or experiencers, as he prefers to call them, as likely to develop a sense of the sanctity of all forms of life, and a heightened concern for the environment. But what about the abductees themselves? Would they agree? Examining their statements, we find that may have testified to just such benefits. Listen to Barney Hill: philosophically, it has given me a broader appreciation of the universe. After the incident happened, Betty and I would many times visit the Hayden Planetarium, listening to the lectures. The more we learned, the more fascinating the universe became to us. We bought books on the stars and planets, and our outlook broadened considerably. Betty agreed, "I think the most important thing to me is that I've taken a broader look at the world." Before this experience, my attitude was that anybody who believed in anything I don't understand, anyone who seemed too far out, I considered sort of a kook. Now I think I have more tolerance toward new ideas, even if I can't accept them myself. Whitney Strieber is the novelist who was abducted in 1986, and who wrote a best-selling book about his experience. The Hills are quoted in John Fuller's The Interrupted Journey. He believes the space aliens have come from another plane of existence, to help us attain a higher state of consciousness. And Sky Ambrose, her real name, is a Missouri resident abducted in 1989. Ambrose believes the aliens are here to bring about evolutionary change, and to make sure we humans don't destroy the planet in the meantime. Her abduction experience, she says, has enriched her life. The anxiety and insecurity that once plagued her have yielded to a sense of spiritual growth. Ambrose has abandoned a career in real estate to become a massage therapist, and is currently writing a book. She is avid to learn more about the aliens' plan for our progress. "I know now that I chose to go through with this," she says of her abduction and its aftermath. "I'm cooperating with a universal purpose. So there are benefits to be had from a UFO abduction. You must simply be able to recognize them, and be open to personal growth. Nobody wants to be abducted. But if it happens, there are two ways to go. You can avoid remembering the experience. Or you can seek to recall, deal with, and of that experience. It's up to you." Quoted in Carried Away? By Frank Husnick, USA Weekend, June 25, 1993. 5. Flying saucers and you, me? You may be saying, "Okay, so people get taken aboard flying saucers. Fine. But it probably won't happen to me. So why should I worry about it?" Let me tell you something. It could easily happen to you. For it has already happened to a multitude of others. Let's take a look at some figures. According to ufologist John Weldon, 2,500 persons are known to have had a UFO contact experience. His survey covered the years 1897 to 1979. Thousands of additional cases have been reported since. But that's only the tip of the iceberg. Fearing ridicule, many contactees choose not to come forward. The number of silent contactees has been estimated, by another ufologist, at 50,000. 50,000. Yet we still haven't considered the largest group of all. These are persons unaware of their flying saucer experience, on account of the memory block. The Roper organization conducted a survey relating to this phenomenon.